This podcast is produced by the Center for Deployment Psychology at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences. The views expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. In addition, references to any specific companies, products, processes, or services does not necessarily constitute or imply endorsement by the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government.
Hey, listeners, we're trying something new this year. Come join us live on Tuesday, August 13th from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern. We will take questions and stories from you, our listeners.
Maybe you have a question for one of our previous guests or even about the episode you're listening to today. Do you have a question for us or a great what is your why story? Either way, we want to hear it.
So call in and we'll address your questions and we'll include them in our final episode of the season. And if you can't call on August 13th, automated operators are standing by right now. Send us a voicemail on our SpeakPipe or an email, and all of our contact info will be below.
Can't wait to hear from you.
Welcome to CDP's podcast, Practical for Your Practice,
where we give you actionable intel to support what you do, one colleague to another.
Welcome back to Practical for Your Practice. Glad everybody is listening in. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Jenna Ermold, and I am joined by my partner in crime, which is really the best descriptor, Dr. Kevin
Probably
Holloway.
True. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent.
Good.
Excited for today.
I am too, because we always love when we get to have some of our shining, amazing CDP folks. When we love talking to outside people or external folks, but it's really cool when we get to shine a spotlight on people we get to work with and learn from. And today we are welcoming Jennifer Nevers, who is a military behavioral health social worker with the center, but also, and this part's really important.
For today, at least, yeah.
Yeah, for today and in general, Major Nevers, and she is also a behavioral health officer with the Indiana Army National Guard. So welcome to Practical for Your Practice. And we use first names. Hopefully it's okay to call you Jennifer.
Absolutely. Please do.
And we usually actually start by having you give everybody just a brief introduction of who you are and, kind of a little bit about what we're going to talk about today. Maybe set it up for us.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much, Jenna and Kevin, for inviting me and having me on today. So as you gave in your introduction, Jennifer Nevers, and I've been here at the center for just over a year on the SAR Behavioral Health Providers Program, but have been a trainer on SBHP actually for many years through my role with the Indiana Army National Guard. So as you mentioned, I am a behavioral health officer in the Army National Guard, and I have been serving in that capacity for going on 7 years. I'm in my sixth year now, and so I am still astonished that that much time has passed. When I first decided to commission, I didn't know how long that was going to last, but it was a route that I kind of jumped into later in life and took on. And I've been really, really blessed and pleased to have a lot of great opportunities in that role. And in that capacity, I work currently in a medical company supporting the soldiers that are in my unit, but I've also had many different active duty kind of opportunities as well. Specifically during COVID, I was activated for about 18 months in total, off and on several times. So had a lot of different experiences during that point too.
Well, this fits really well with the theme of the season, which is what is your why? It's interesting you said you joined up with the Guard, the Reserve, a little bit later than maybe it's typical. So why? Like, what drew you to do that? We'd love for you to share more about the backstory and the reasons.
Yeah, it's a great question. And if you would have told me when I was 18 that I would have joined the military, I would have told you were absolutely crazy. I did have a bit of a different path to it. My grandfather served in the Navy, but other than that, I didn't have any other family connections. And so I'm, the only sibling who's done that and haven't had that experience for the most part within my family. I ended up, when I first got my clinical license, joining the VA. And that really kind of started me down this path of working with the military community. And in that role, I worked with veterans who were homeless and veterans who were in the criminal justice system. And I really just grew to love the culture of the community and just learned so much in that capacity and developed such strong relationships, and also really started to really want to be able to make an impact earlier in the process. I was seeing people when they were already out and when they were already dealing, you know, with post-transition issues and really, you know, a lot of psychosocial needs at the time. And I really just kind of felt called to be able to intervene earlier was one of the big reasons. And so I had a big change in my life, and I actually got divorced shortly before I ended up commissioning. And it was at that point that I was just like, you know what, you know, life is too short, and I want to jump in and take this opportunity. So that is really what brought me in.
That's really
to
cool.
National Guard service.
And, you know, that I always do love hearing people's backstory. And when we teach military culture, we always talk about this idea that people join for such different reasons. I mean, like, and it's such an important piece to kind of understand. Similar to you, Jennifer, I had no military background. My friends and family thought I was nuts. I was in active duty Air Force, but like, it wasn't a family thing. There wasn't sort of any typical, it seemed out of the blue. So thank you for sharing that. How has the experience been? I mean, I think that sometimes we go in with expectations about what that service is going to be like. What have been some of the positive parts, the things that are you've really enjoyed, and maybe some challenges to share as well?
Yeah, absolutely. There are certainly both of those pieces, right? And it's the positives. It's the things that have really been strengthened throughout my time in the military that has kept me here and perhaps will keep me here for longer than what I may have anticipated initially. So one of the great benefits of being in the National Guard community is really developing friendships and truly having what I feel like is a more expanded family network. I get asked a lot about, you know, my kind of obligations for the military and how much time that I spend in doing that and whether that is worth it and how that feels sometimes. And I always explain to folks that it's just so different. It doesn't feel like I'm on call like I would be for another job. It's really being there to support fellow service members, to really be that resource and connection point at a time that can be so challenging. And so, you know, looping it back to our real, you know, behavioral health intent, it's been incredibly rewarding to be able to be that person to help support them through that process. There's so much fear around accessing mental health care with service members. There's so much stigma during that. And it is so challenging for National Guard and reservists to actually access mental health care. We don't have that ability to go to a military treatment facility in the same way that active duty component members do. And that can really be a big barrier to care. And so one of the things that I really take of such great importance in my role is to be there and support them through that process and to really minimize that length of time into getting them connected to care and try to get them set up as best as I can. And that's been incredibly rewarding to be able to impact that in a positive way.
Yeah.
And then some of the challenges you asked about that as well. It's difficult to have multiple careers. you know, one of the great things about serving and having another career is I get to do a lot of different activities. I get to really diversify my skill set and have all those different experiences. But that also means that my time is overwhelmed sometimes. And so that pull between my civilian career and my military career and my family life is really a constant juggling act. I hear a lot from people, you know, even our team, like, I don't know how you do that. I'm not sure how you manage that. And I'm like, well, you just kind of figure it out. And sometimes one of them wins and another one doesn't. And you do your best to balance it the best way that you can. And the same is true for any member of the National Guard and Reserve community, is that it's that constant kind of juggling and balancing act. And so that's certainly a challenge. And then those pieces of missing out on milestones and events. I call my birthday now my Army birthday, because without fail, I am always in uniform. It does not matter when it is, I'm in uniform. So I just
what have better that way expectation. To celebrate, right?
Exactly.
So you would have to buy a cool birthday outfit and saving money, because now you just wear your uniform. So it's a pro.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Instead, I get to go to the USO and have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and go to the range. I mean, you can't ask for anything better.
That's quite a birthday for a lot of people, I would imagine.
It is. It yeah. is. I'm not complaining. It's actually usually quite enjoyable. And that's the fun part, is people really try to make that special. And that's getting back to that strength, right? And that value is that it matters. It matters to the people that I'm serving with, and my friends and, you know, my extended family, if you will. And so they try to make that special as much as they can.
So, you know, it's interesting to me, especially the, like, kind of the particular, not challenges just because of challenges' sake, but I think it's sometimes as providers, we don't always think about what are those barriers to care, or what are those, like, the differences perhaps between folks in the active duty component and those who are in the Guard Reserve component, and whether it's, you know, access to care, or maybe things that providers need to be aware of to understand, to make adjustments. You know, EVPs are EVPs, and service members are service members, but there's lots of different kinds of service members that are serving in different ways, of course, in different branches, have different jobs, whether it's active duty, reserve component. So just interested in, you know, just kind of from your experience, what are some things that providers kind of need to know when we're providing care, especially evidence-based psychotherapies? I mean, that's what this podcast is about, is evidence-based psychotherapies, and about, you know, providing them with competence and confidence, and cultural competence is a big part of that as well. So, like, what are some things we should know? What are things we should be aware of?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'm really glad that you asked that, Kevin, because it's something that I think oftentimes goes unnoticed, or perhaps inadvertently overlooked with this population. Uh-huh. Because we are so geographically dispersed, we are not embedded in one community. My unit's 4 hours away from where I live.
Wow. Yeah.
And so if we deploy, if we go on training exercises and missions, no one in my community is going to know that. And so it's so important to recognize that piece and really see and ask those good questions about that military service, of course, when we're doing assessments, mm-hmm. to really take that into account. And also recognizing that a lot of reservists, a lot of National Guard and Reserve component members, they engage in a lot of military work outside of what we typically think of as that minimum duty requirement. So The minimum duty requirements, 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year. And I cannot tell you the last time that I did that. That was maybe
we really
my first
need
year,
to update that, don't we?
Yes.
It's 4 weekends a month and 3 weeks a year minimum, if not more.
Yes, exactly. And so it's really quite a difference between that minimum requirement and what folks are actually doing. And so recognizing that and giving that kind of the importance that it deserves, I think, is really important. I think we sometimes, there can be a stigma attached to being a National Guard or reservist, and just acknowledging that those folks are engaging in a lot of sacrifice, and they are engaging in a lot of service that goes unpaid and goes unseen. And looping it back to our conversation about EBPs, it's so important for providers to understand when they're considering implementing EBPs, how current training missions and current responsibilities and roles that reservist is involved in may impact their ability to actually complete the EBP.
Right. When you've got two jobs on your plate, your regular civilian job on top of your obligations with the military, it might be harder to do between session homework, for example, or even getting in on a particularly regular basis for, you know, that a lot of our protocols have a particular time frame that we want to be seeing people. And that sounds like it might be even harder for somebody in the reserve and guard component than perhaps somebody in the active duty component.
And sort of understanding that behavior in the context of guard service, correct, right? Like, yeah, not making assumptions about why somebody isn't doing homework or can't meet weekly for 60 minutes. But I think that flexibility and willingness to meet them where they are is critical. So I love that you pointed that out.
That piece is so important, Jenna. And we talk about that so much in our military culture training of not prescribing meaning to these behaviors that are really related to that military service. It's something that can be so easy to miss, particularly if you're not working with this community a lot. And unless you're in a heavy guard populated community, then you're probably not. It may be pretty infrequent that you're seeing somebody who's serving in the community. But again, it's so important to understand what that operational tempo looks like. Is there AT coming up where you start the EBP and in the middle of it, they're going to be gone for 2 weeks?
I want to go back to something else you said too, and about kind of we all think about, I think, often the stigma of accessing mental health care or the stigma associated with having a diagnosis. But I think I heard you say that there's also maybe a stigma attached with being in the reserve and the guard component. And I've heard maybe from some folks I've worked with that there's this feeling of like being not really military, like kind of second class military, if you will. Could you speak about that and how it might impact access to care or kind of the work that might happen?
Absolutely. And you really hit that spot on. There can be this perception that your service in the Guard or Reserves doesn't have as much value as in active duty because it's not quote unquote full time, even though for many it actually does become full time. But the reality is we have to be trained and ready to deploy just as active duty members do, with far less time to be able to do that in and a lot more constraints and juggling. And I even experienced a little bit of that myself in one of my first military schools that I went to. You know, there was this kind of this feeling from the active duty members that were in the group that because we were only there for a short amount of time, that it was easier for us somehow to actually be there and engage in that school. And that was not my experience at all, because the reality is I'm actually having to maintain my civilian job and ensure that I'm staying up to date and things are moving through as they need to in that role while I am also conducting my military duties. And so there can be a lot of, you know, nuances to that service that people may miss or overlook. And it really struck me actually at a recent event that I was at. It was an international opportunity that I was engaged in, and it was all for reserve members across the globe. And so there were about 28 different countries that were represented. Yeah. And one of the things that came up in our conversations and that actually a UK service member ended up pointing out was that for them, they really saw their reserve time as being more of a hobby that they got paid for. And they pointed out that for us, it seemed like it was truly more of a part-time or above part-time responsibility. Uh-huh. And so even though they were able to kind of see those differences in culture and how much time we really committed to the work that we were doing. And so that really, I think, is something that deserves kind of attention and recognition for, and that can oftentimes be overlooked.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a fascinating observation that it was really cool. You had that opportunity to go internationally and kind of meet with all sorts of folks. But one of the things that and I know, Jennifer, you teach this all the time, military culture that we foot stomp is just this importance of like never assuming and always asking and finding out what was, you know, what was somebody's reason for joining? What is their job in the reserves? That might be totally different from their civilian job. How has that played out? You know, how is their, like, is their unit all over the state, or are there, is there sort of a centralized group of them? You know, what does their support system look like? And there's so many rich questions that can be asked. And I didn't know, I mean, this is a little bit, we're going to ask you shortly for some resources and actionable intel, but like, do you have just sort of a short list of great to ask questions off the top of your head that you think would get providers headed in the right direction as they're engaging with Guard and Reserve off the bat?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing is you have to identify that they're even in the Guard and Reserve.
Right, or
that
they right. Have,
yeah. So even having that family connection as well. And so asking those good questions about, have you served in the military, or has anyone in your family ever served in the military? And better understanding that piece and being mindful of not asking, are you a veteran? Because there may be many folks right. who don't identify as that. And there's actually a great number of National Guard and Reservists who don't meet the qualifications per the VA standards to be considered a veteran to receive healthcare services there. And so there's a lot of complexity if we ask it in that way. And so asking that really mindful question to get to that information of, are they currently serving? And then to your point, Jenna, better understanding, what does that time commitment look like? What are your roles and responsibilities in that capacity? And I think one of the things that really can be such a striking question is asking if their visit to you is related to their military service.
Yes.
And that one, it seems so simple, but I will tell you, I've had a provider ask me that before, and I was just taken aback by it, because it's something that gives value to that service. It says, I see that, I see you, I'm acknowledging the importance of that, and I want you to be able to have the space to talk about that if you need to. And one of the things that I think we can oftentimes overlook is the fact that even if someone hasn't had perhaps a combat deployment or a deployment as we would typically define it outside of the continental United States, National Guard deploys and mobilizes frequently,
yes,
even within the continental United States. And those missions can be life-threatening. Those missions can be traumatic. And those experiences can shape that person just the same as those other types of deployments and things that we give a lot of visibility to. And so recognizing that part of it, not ignoring that potential to have those traumatic events, even if they haven't had that typical service experience that would make you believe that they may, you know, have PTSD or have those combat or military traumatic experiences.
Jennifer, I think you just hit on something that I've really wanted to explore and talk about. I don't know, we would need much more time to do this, but I think the other thing that folks forget is, given that folks are in the Guard and Reserve do respond to things in our country, they are things that they as a citizen have beliefs about and thoughts about and ways that right. they would want to engage with certain topics, but they're serving in a Guard and Reserve capacity. Let's say they're responding to a demonstration to provide, you know, make sure there's security and safety and things break out. And I think, again, you know, there's such a lot of experiences that aren't represented in how we think about, you know, what a service member faces, right? Like, we're so used to thinking about what a service member faces downrange, and really responding to things nationally, you know, here in the U.S. probably really brings about a lot of challenges where I have to keep my citizen self back here because my, you know, my guard self has to be forward. And I don't know if you had any just sort of thoughts about that. And then I know we will move on to two resources after that.
Absolutely, absolutely, Jenna. So it is such an important piece that that just because we're that quote unquote part-time military member, we still have to follow those same regulations. You know, we can't engage in certain discussions and you know, publicize our political beliefs and all those kind of pieces. And so, again, it's that we're very much embedded in those requirements and those cultural experiences, but not necessarily embedded with the resources that maybe do exist for us in some capacity, but they're not geographically close to us. And so we don't have that visibility in the same way and the access in the same way to be able to get connected to those pieces.
And related to that, you know, just the sense that sometimes, you know, kind of political views, or, you know, I think we all have them, right? And they kind of run the spectrum. Not making assumption that because somebody is in the military or the Guard and Reserve component of the military, they have particular political views and such. I'm thinking of a client that I had, you know, a year or two ago that was in the Guard Reserve and responded to January 6th and needing to, you know, helping to secure the Capitol and such afterwards, and talked a lot about the struggle between, you know, kind of their personal political views and what they needed, what they were allowed to talk about while they're on duty versus what they weren't allowed to talk about when they're on duty. And, you know, just kind of the, almost, you know, that feeling of authenticity, but also very much, you know, respecting, portraying what they were doing there and what their, you know, roles were. And it was a very interesting experience for me. I think I haven't worked with a lot of Reserve and Guard folks, but just kind of, working in that context and kind of considering, you know, that, you know, having nobody's job defines their political views, or, you know, it's not always a correlation there. And it was really nice to have some open conversations about what that meant for that person.
Absolutely. And I think that really just, you know, makes me think about, Kevin, how this is an authoritative environment. You know, these service members are doing their job. They are doing what is asked of them. That is the expectation, you know, it's mission first. Yeah. And so it doesn't particularly matter how we feel about it, but that can certainly impact what they're bringing into the therapy space. That can impact, you know, their thoughts and feelings about their time in service.
Absolutely.
And depending on what those missions were and whether they believed in them or whether they didn't, can impact that perception and bring about different challenges that we want to be able to have open conversations about. And also being so mindful, we've kind of talked a little bit about biases, you know, our own biases and how those can really show up when we're working with service members, and particularly when we add that kind of geopolitical context to it, and being aware of that, and perhaps even being aware when there's that boundary for our own self, that if that service member has these beliefs or experiences that are outside of what we believe we can assist them to, and being mindful and referring them out when it's appropriate to ensure they can get that great access to care. Because one of the things that I really take with a lot of responsibility to myself is that for some people, you know, we have really one opportunity, one shot to get them connected. And if that doesn't go well, then we may have lost that opportunity with that person. And so being willing to acknowledge where our own boundaries of competence lie and our own comfort is, and ensuring that we're providing that best quality care. Because one of the things that we know with our National Guard and Reserve component community is that we rely on civilian providers to get care. That is where we go. And so, unlike within the military health system, we really need providers to be really discerning about their capabilities and to know when they need to refer out or seek additional consultation and resources.
This is a beautiful segue. You just set me up for my next question so nicely. So we have so many amazing civilian providers who really are eager to become not only clinically competent, but culturally competent too. So if we were to sort of highlight a few resources to support those providers to strengthen their, you know, strengthen their muscles when working with the Garden Reserve and to give them a leg up in terms of feeling like they can connect and provide the best care possible. What do you want to throw in there? What would you like folks to know about?
Yeah, absolutely, Jenna. There's, gosh, that could be a whole 25-minute, hour-long, you know, segment in and of itself. But
the good news, you know, is we can link to things. So you can mention them, and then we can link to things in the show notes. So that's there for you.
It's fantastic. We will link to all kinds of things. So first off, I just want to re-highlight and make the point again that we have to ask those good questions about military service first. So that's one that we can implement today, right now, and even thinking about it in a system-wide context too. Is it something that we can implement for all of our providers, not just on your own clinical assessment, but something that can be done across the board if you're working in a broader system? So being mindful of that piece, but then taking that a step further and getting that military cultural competency training, we offer a wide variety of resources here at the center, specifically with the STAR Behavioral Health Providers Program, which I'm a part of. We have the ability for civilian mental health providers to be able to get trained in military cultural competency at no cost. It's a fantastic. Great partnership. Yes, it really is. And I say often that when I tell people that, I feel like they think I'm a spammer or, you know, a telemarketer.
But wait, there's more.
Exactly. And I'm like, no, but it's real. It really is true.
And it's nationwide now too, correct? Am I, like, it used to be kind of limited number of states, or can you maybe just speak to that quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. So currently we are serving in 45 states, and on October 1st, the beginning of the next fiscal year, we are going to be completely nationwide. So all 50 states and 4 territories. So it is something that is available and accessible to everyone, all providers that may be hearing this within the continental United States. So this is really important point, and it's something that I strongly encourage providers to get connected with and to get that military cultural competency training. And even if you have service experience yourself, we get comments all the time from folks that, I never realized some of these things with the reserve component, even though I have that prior service, or I never realized what some of the other branches were doing and some of those cultural complexities. And so expanding that knowledge and awareness into a broader space, even if you have that own service yourself, that your prior service. And then the other piece that I really just want to highlight is the National Guard itself has a plethora of resources available for service members. And I strongly encourage civilian providers that have the potential or interest in working with this community to learn what those are in your area. The National Guard has the Soldier and Family Readiness Centers, and those are a great point of contact to ensure that those soldiers and airmen can get connected to all of the resources that they may need. And so those can be financial resources. It can be support for domestic violence situations. It can be getting connected to educational benefits, all those different components. And so strongly encourage providers to learn about those resources in your community and reach out to those behavioral health staff in your area to better understand what their needs are and what they're doing and where those access to care issues may lie, to see if there's a way that you may be able to support that. One of the things that we talk about often on our program is the real need for providers to be a TRICARE panel provider. That's the primary insurance source for this community. And it's something that I hear often in working with these state teams, that they really lack access to providers who are accepting TRICARE. And so if that's something that you have the ability to get connected with, that may also be a way that you can really start to make a positive impact with this community. I'm really, really pretty quickly.
That's really fantastic. I really appreciate that. So just to summarize for folks about kind of actionable intel, I think it's the same thing as the resources we just talked about. Ask the question, number one, ask if they have served or are they currently serving in the military, and not just active duty component. There's some fantastic training available through the Center for Deployment Psychology, through the STAR Behavioral Health Providers Program. We'll put links to that program on our show notes as well, so folks can get there. I wanted to point out too, and you didn't mention this, but I think in relation to the fact that we talk about evidence-based psychotherapies here on this podcast, one of the tiers of training in SBHP is getting trained workshops in evidence-based psychotherapies, particularly in the context of working with service members and Guard and Reserve component especially. So that's a fantastic place to start and get that training if you don't have it already. And like you said, even if you have experience, there's always something to learn there too. Third is National Guard has fantastic resources. We're going to have links to that as well. And then finally, too, consider getting impaneled with TRICARE, TRICARE East, TRICARE West. There's two different regionally. But yeah, we'll try to get some information on our show notes too about, you know, how you might get impaneled in TRICARE there. And one of the great ways to get connected to this community and providing services to them.
Absolutely, Kevin. And we actually on SBHP have a handout on how to help providers do that. And so just another great example of how we can assist with that process and really support the role that providers are playing to better serve this community.
And let's say it again, SBHP is free.
And she's not just trying to sell something.
No.
It's one of those, like, one of the things I always say is we create these amazing programs. We're so lucky to have funding to be able to do that. And we really want people in the community to use the resource. So come get the training, go through the tiers, get connected. The SBHP team, which we call the STAR Behavioral Health Provider Health. Now I'm fumbling the title because I'm so used to calling it SBHB. We call it SBHB, but get in that STAR Providers Program. Jennifer, we are so grateful that you joined
us
today to talk more about your personal experience, which is fascinating. Thanks for sharing some of that, but also the importance of, you know, really providing the best possible care to this incredibly important part of our military, who we are very grateful for. So thank you for joining us. And we look forward to having you back someday, hopefully.
Yes,
it was great chatting with you.
Thank you so much for having
me. And for those of you listening, we hope you join us next time on Practical for Your Practice. And please make sure you check out all those great resources in the show notes. So thanks again.
Talk to you all soon.
Thanks for listening to Practical for Your Practice.
Please feel free to subscribe, like, and share.
Until next time.